Liberty University Broadcast Studio. It's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Hour 3 of the big show, broadcasting coast to coast, border to border, from our Southern Command in Memphis, Tennessee. Hope you guys are doing great out there. 844-747-8868 is our toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. Our website is toddstarnes.com. We've got a great show this hour. Our good friend Senator Rand Paul coming up in just a few moments up on Capitol Hill. A lot going on in Washington right now. But we've been following the attacks on religious liberty under the name of public safety for quite some time. And we have seen the government in blue states ratchet up these attacks. And we've all seen the images, and we have them at toddstarnes.com. We have documented the Antifa protesters out there attacking the churches, trying to set St. John's Church on fire in Washington, D.C. They were burning stacks of Bibles in Portland, Oregon. And in the state of California, you have the governor there cracking down on church attendance as well as the singing of songs and hymns and spiritual songs. But one man has taken a very vocal and bold and courageous and godly stand. His name is John MacArthur. He is the pastor of Grace Community Church. I've been honored to speak at Grace Community Church at an apologetics conference, and it was an incredible honor to be able to share a meal with Pastor MacArthur. He is on the Liberty University Newsmaker line. Pastor MacArthur, good to have you back on the program.
Well, thank you, Todd, and it's my pleasure.
You know, we've been following the developments at Grace Community for the past several weeks now, and I understand, and the reason we have you on the show today is that the Thomas More Society is representing you guys, and as you go up against the government of California, give us the latest update.
Well, the bottom line is the state has virtually shut our church down. Most people wouldn't understand that. They might be saying, well, why don't you just go outside? Didn't they say you could have church outside? Well, in the first place, there were 6,000 people here last Sunday, and we don't have enough outside to absorb those people. Secondly, they sent us about an inch thick standard of health and safety rules and regulations we had to follow that were utterly unreasonable and virtually impossible to keep. Like one person in a restroom at a time, arrows 6 feet apart, everybody in masks, everybody has to leave the campus if there's a turnover before anybody can come on. Well, that's like one paragraph out of an inch thick of pages that we could never possibly follow. So essentially, if we did what they told us to do, we'd have to shut everything down. We aren't willing to do that. We're taking the position the church has always taken since the second chapter of Acts. We are the salt and light. We are the gospel proclaimers in the world. We are mandated by God to come together and be lights in the darkness. And we're going to be the church. We're going to be the church, visible church in the world. The head of the church is our Lord Jesus, not Governor Newsom or Mayor Garcetti. So we believe the church to be the most essential, and the governor, neither by divine right or by constitutional right, can determine what is essential. And when he determines that Walmart and abortion clinics are essential, but the church is not essential, he doesn't have the authority to do that. So we have to respond, and that's what we've done. And our people have not been told to come back; they've just kept coming back. And we believe the Constitution protects the church. It recognizes God-given, unalienable rights. We're not defying the Constitution. We believe these leaders are, because the Constitution empowers them to protect the church, and they're not doing that.
There's so much to unpack here. We do understand that there were threats made from the government directed at both you and the church. What were those threats?
Well, it was up to $1,000 fine and 90 days in jail.
And they told you that?
Well, they sent it in a letter from a law firm. And, you know, my hero in the Bible is the Apostle Paul. And I would be happy to experience what he experienced in every town he went into. He didn't ask what the hotel was like. He asked what the jail was like, because that's where he knew he'd end up. But we don't feel that they have the authority to jail us. The Constitution would not allow that, for us doing what we are given the right to do. But if it came to that, that's okay. We're going to be faithful to the divine calling the Lord has placed upon us. And look, we're very, very compliant with the government. We have had 50 years of relationship with the powers that be here in this city. We've been honored a dozen ways, even in recent years. Even as little as 2 weeks ago, we were given a plaque by the police department for all that we've done for them. So we understand the role that Caesar plays, and we understand good citizenship. But we also understand when government steps over the boundary and invades the territory that belongs to Christ.
On the Liberty University Newsmaker line is Pastor John MacArthur. Pastor, when you look at what's happening around the country, and there have been so many attacks on people of faith, churches being told they had to shut down, what's going on here? What is big picture? What do you think is going on here?
Nothing new. Absolutely nothing new. This is the conflict. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. We wrestle against spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. This goes all the way back to the arch enemy of God, who is Satan, and the forces of Satan, the fallen angels, are behind this, and all the human people who are part of the kingdom of darkness. Obviously, that's a biblical explanation of this, and people don't understand that. I think many people would be shocked to know the reality that they are of their father, the devil, and that the devil uses people for his ends and his goals, and his primary goal is to silence the church. We understand that unbelieving people don't get the Bible. They don't believe the Bible. They can't believe the Bible. It's spiritually discerned, and they're spiritually dead. We also understand that there's deep animosity against the Scripture, because even Jesus said, "You hate me because I tell you, you're sinful." That is the message of the Bible, that men and women are sinful and headed for eternal judgment, and only the gospel of Jesus Christ can save them. The message is bad news, the worst news possible before it gets to the good news, and that's offensive to people. So we understand that it's always been that way. The church has, if it's faithful and true to its message of the gospel, it is going to be hated. Jesus said, "Hey, they'll hate you because they hated me." So we understand that. Doesn't mean that we seek to be hated. We want to be loving as Christ was loving. We want to be meek and gentle as he was meek and gentle. We don't want to be the offenders. We want the message to offend the sinner so the sinner feels guilty and comes to Christ for salvation.
And honestly, Pastor MacArthur, from our position, I think you guys have really done a tremendous job of that, truly being gracious in all of this. And we've seen how some other, you know, churches around the country have responded, and really, I wouldn't say a more, you know, a theatrical way, but you guys have been very measured and very gracious in the way that you've handled the government leaders there as they're trying to crack down on what you guys are wanting to do.
Well, a simple way to understand it is this. We don't want to turn the mission field into the enemy. The governor's not our enemy. The mayor's not our enemy. The powers that be are not our enemy. They're our mission field. We're commanded in Scripture to pray for the salvation of people who are over us in government. And that's what we're doing. We're praying for the salvation of Governor Newsom, the salvation of Garcetti, and all the other people. This is why we're here in the world. This is the raison d'etre for the existence of the church in the world. We're here to proclaim the gospel, and part of that is praying for those people. They're not our enemies. They don't recognize it. They are the enemies of God, but they are our mission field, and so we want to speak the truth. But as Scripture says, we want to speak it in love.
You know what really strikes me? There was a follow-up video on the church's website, and you said something towards the end of the video that really caught my attention. You said you were disappointed in a way that that other, you know, evangelical leaders were not standing alongside of you, and I realized, wow, he's really got a good point there, and you do.
Yeah, I just don't understand, other than the fact that, you know, we've been suffering for 20 years under the attack of pragmatism in the church, that somehow we've lost our way theologically, and we've forgotten that we preach the message and God does the saving. And the church has fallen prey to pragmatism, which essentially says, you know, we've got to somehow overcome the sinner's natural resistance by some kind of marketing strategy. We got to tweak the service. We got to tweak the music. We've got to make the message compatible with what the sinner wants. We've got to give him what he in his natural state wants. And so we've so softened the message, thinking we have to be non-offensive, that we're afraid to all of a sudden take a stand on anything. Because, you know, some of these churches literally, Todd, have said, these leading pastors in megachurches, we have to shut down the church because we can't give our audience what they want. That has virtually been said. And what they're saying is, since we've designed the church to be something the unbeliever will enjoy, we can't create the experience under these restrictions, so we just won't have church. That's a failure to understand that the church is the gathering of the redeemed people of God to worship Him. So we've been under this pragmatic influence now for a couple of decades, and that is the reason the church doesn't know now how to stand up and fight.
I'm curious, what has been the response of the fellowship there at Grace Community to returning and having those services?
Well, the first couple of weeks, you know, we followed the protocols of basically live stream only, because we were told millions of people were going to die, so, you know, we weren't going to be stupid about it. So it was empty. I was preaching to an empty service, nobody in the building, and it was going out and translated into five languages and going around the world and all that. By the third week, people started showing up. We didn't say anything. They just started showing up. The fourth week more, the fifth week more. 2 weeks ago, there were probably 3,000 people who just said, look, we don't buy the narrative anymore. They know the statistic that there have been, I think now, 9,000 people out of 40 million in California who have died, and half of them were over 80 and had all kinds of comorbidity issues. So they know the statistical reality that you have a 99.99% chance of not being affected by this, certainly not in a deadly way. So they didn't buy the narrative, and they just started coming back. And last Sunday, I think, what, there were 6,000 or more. Wow. They just stormed the place. And so we're just saying the church wants to be the church. They want to be here. They want to gather, and nothing's going to stop them. And I reminded people, look, we're the original protesters. We go back 500 years to the Protestant Reformation. We're with that group, Martin Luther and John Calvin, who protested, and we're protesting today, proclaiming the truth in the midst of lies and deception.
And so far, no repercussions. They haven't acted on these threats.
No, they haven't acted at all on the threats, and I don't know what their strategy would be. This is a church that is loved by this city, admired by the city. There are many people who have significant roles to play in this city on many levels and fronts who are a part of this church. So I think they have to be measured in what they do. And we want to give honor to whom honor is due, for sure. We want to be gracious about this. We're not rebellious. And we want them to know that we respect their range of right and just responsibility, but we're going to honor the Lord, and we're going to be faithful to His commands.
And I hope this really motivates a lot of Christians in California to realize that elections do have consequences, and they ought to pay very close attention to what's been done over the past few years.
Well, that's certainly true, and we do hope that, and we hope for the gospel to have an exploding impact in the state of California, so we can get some people to come to Christ and begin to realize that the political party you align with nowadays is not defined by economics and it's not defined by social views. It's defined by morality. It's a battle between the homosexuals, transgender, abortionists, and the people who know that those things are sinful things that cannot be acceptable. If people come to Christ and acknowledge him as Lord, they can have no part of a party that has that kind of sin in its platform.
Pastor, we're going to have to leave it there. It's just always a great honor to be able to talk with you on the radio, and God bless you, sir.
Thank you, and you as well, Todd.
All right, Pastor John MacArthur from Grace Community Church, and they the news of the day, the Thomas More Society is now representing the church as they stand for their constitutional rights, and that is the right, the freedom that we have to practice our faith in the public marketplace and in the church house. We got to take a break. We'll be right back.
America's only fair and balanced talk radio host, Todd Starnes.
What a great interview. We will have that up in the podcast this afternoon, so you'll be able to download all 3 hours of the Todd Starnes radio show. You'll also be able to listen to that interview with Pastor MacArthur. And I think this really is a must-listen-to podcast, especially if you love the Constitution, if you love your freedom. You need to listen to what Pastor MacArthur is saying here. And the idea that a pastor as prominent as John MacArthur could possibly go to jail simply for preaching and holding a church service, you would think that would be, you would be smoking something if you would have said something like that a few years ago. But that's where we are right now. And, you know, again, I wrote a lot about this in my book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. And you need to understand what has been happening in our country. There's been a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes, and all you have to do is go back to the conversation we had with Jeremy Dice from First Liberty Institute when he said on our radio station, on our radio show, that the work that Obama did and the damage that he did to our military is still being undone 4 years into the Trump presidency, and we're still dealing with this fundamental transformation of our military. And remember, Obama promised not to fundamentally transform just the military, but he promised to fundamentally transform our nation. And that's where we are right now. That's what that looks like. You people out in California, you are foolish if you vote for Democrats. Foolish. There's a supermajority in control of your state right now. And if they want to, they can throw every single pastor in California in jail. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. That's why you got to get out there. You got to go vote. If you want to facilitate change, you got to go vote. 844-747-8868, our number. ToddStarnes.com, the website. We'll be right back. Not too happy. They just unveiled the new splash shields on their helmets, part of this whole protect the football players from the China virus stuff. And the LSU players are like, are you kidding us? We can't even breathe under these things. They said it's like playing football in a Ziploc bag. Unbelievable. So we'll see. UConn, by the way, says they're not going to play football this year. Do they normally play football, Caleb?
Not very well.
Okay, that's what I thought. So we'll see how things go in the Southeastern Conference. But, folks, we got to have some football. We just have to. just for some sanity. All right, 844-747-8868 is our telephone number. Tomorrow, you folks listening to us across the state of Tennessee are going to be heading to the polling place to cast your vote for the U.S. Senate race. And there is a huge fight underway between Bill Hagerty, who is the pro-Mitt Romney, Al Gore establishment guy, and Dr. Manny Sethi, a trauma surgeon, a political newcomer who has the backing of people like Senator Ted Cruz, and the guy on our newsmaker line, Senator Rand Paul. Senator, good to have you back with us.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So I had the honor of emceeing an event with Ted Cruz and Manny Sethi in Memphis, Tennessee, where we do our show. It was at noon, and Senator, I tell you, there must have been 400 people that turned out. I've really not seen this much excitement out on the campaign trail for somebody.
Yeah, you know, we had a rally over in Nashville area with Joe Carr, who's a well-known conservative supporting Manny Sethi, and myself, and we had 1,000. So, I mean, we've had a bunch of big crowds. Ted Cruz has had big crowds with Manny, but Manny's got a lot of energy, and I think the conservatives are starting to figure this out, that what Tennessee needs to do is really send somebody up here who is as conservative as the public. Tennessee voters are very, very conservative. But unfortunately, we keep getting people up here who don't vote conservative. I mean, Obamacare is in place because a Tennessee senator voted to keep Obamacare.
You know, I'm curious how you got involved in the Senate campaign and why you were drawn to Manny Sethi.
Well, you know, I'm a physician. He's a physician. We were introduced to each other by a classmate of mine from medical school. And I've gotten to know him, and frankly, I wanted to get to know him for a while. I've talked to him over several months because I'm kind of tired of electing Republicans who don't follow through. I'm tired of Republicans who said, oh, Obama spends too much and borrows too much, and now these Republicans are voting for as much or more, actually 10 times more spending than Obama was ever for. So I'm just tired of the hypocrisy of electing Republicans who say one thing and do another. But I think Manny Sethi's the real deal. I wouldn't be supporting him. I'm only supporting a handful of candidates around the country, and I'm supporting Manny because I think he's the real deal. He will stand up to the big spenders in both parties.
And honestly, we've got to have that, Senator. This spending is just insane. It's out of control. I think the average Republican voter is sitting back going, why in the world are we voting for you guys if you're not going to get spending under control?
Yeah, so it's spending, it's Obamacare, it's, you heard the story. Every Republican in the country was saying, oh, give us back the House, and then we did, and then give us back the Senate. We need the White House, and we got all three branches. And Obamacare still survived because weak-kneed Republicans deserted the cause. So it is important for a Republican state like Tennessee that's probably going to send us a Republican senator. The most important vote is tomorrow, and I do think Manny Sethi's the real deal. I think he is a constitutional conservative. There's other issues I care about, too. President Trump has been trying to end the war in Afghanistan. I think the war has been over for 20 years, and I think Manny Sethi will help him do it. Some of the other Republicans, they say they will, but then they get up here and they vote to continue the war forever. And I think President Trump's right when he said that great nations don't fight perpetual wars. Our soldiers agree with him. I talk to soldiers in my state all the time. The vast majority of soldiers are questioning, what is the mission? Why am I being sent to Afghanistan after 20 years?
Senator, we're looking at a country that is being devastated by the China virus. I mean, these, you know, I'm a small business owner. I hear it from so many of you know, other small business owners in Western Tennessee in the Memphis area, and many are saying they're not going to be able to survive if we can't get this country, get this economy back up and running again.
Well, there's no amount of money we can print to save our economy. The only way to save the economy is you have to get the government out of the way. We've essentially accepted giving so much power to a governor. Governors basically are wielding more power than the Politburo did in the Soviet Union right now. They're dictating every aspect of every business. They're dictating whether you can go to church, how you can attend church, how you can go to a restaurant, how many people can be in a restaurant. But as a consequence, in my state, 700,000 people are out of work. Because one person, our Democrat governor, closed everything down. But we can't just keep borrowing money and passing it out. I thought it was insane that we sent checks to working. It'd be one thing to extend unemployment at the accepted rate, at the rate that the states pay. That's a reasonable proposal. But then when we added $600 on it, right now, if you make $50,000 or less, there's no reason to work in our country because the government will give you that for not working. That is a disastrous disincentive to work. And so, you know, we need help up here. But I promise you, the Democrats don't care at all about the deficit. But our real problem is that half the Republicans don't either.
And to that point, I look, this is a big problem for us. And, you know, at the radio station, we cannot hire people because they're making more money with the government check. That is just a huge issue. And I'm so glad that, you know, that you're standing firm on this. And we need more Republicans like you up on the Capitol Hill.
Yeah, and I think that's why Manny Sethi will make a big difference for us. I think he will have the courage, and he's kind of like me. I tell people I had a good job before. I was a physician. I'm not afraid to be unelected. I'm not afraid to tell the truth, and I'm not afraid to say the emperor has no clothes or that the U.S. government has no money. You need people like that. But if people really are just going to come up here and be a rubber stamp for leadership, we don't need that. Our leadership often sells us down the river.
Well said. Well said. Senator, thank you again for the great work you're doing, not just in the Commonwealth, but also down here in the Volunteer State. I know a lot of people are very excited to meet you and to say thank you for the great work you're doing.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
All right. Senator Rand Paul, folks. And again, all of you Tennessee folks, pay very close attention. Get out. Vote tomorrow. And, you know, he is right about that spending nonsense. I mean, come on. You Republicans are spending money like drunk Democrats. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. By the way, I've got to share this story with you. This is a fascinating. And again, this goes to law and order, which I think is going to be a big campaign issue for the president. Memphis, Tennessee is one of the top five most dangerous cities in America. And there are only about, 1.3 million people who live in this area. And they don't have enough cops. As a matter of fact, they're about 800 shy of the full complement they need. But there's a problem because, you see, Memphis, the city leaders, not the mayor, but the city council, because the mayor gets this, Jim Strickland, he's a Democrat, but he's a law and order guy, so he understands this. But the city council, which is made up of a bunch of radical leftists, they don't want the city to hire any police officers from outside the city limits. So if you live, and I'm not sure what it's like, what the rules are in your area, your community. But in Memphis, if you are a police officer, you have to live within the city limits. And if you don't, then you can't be a police officer in Memphis, Tennessee. I believe Shelby County, so you can be in the county. So the majority of people here in Memphis say, well, wait a second, we need police officers and we need to do away with that requirement. And so they wanted to vote on it. And I saw one survey, 70% of the citizens support letting people from outside of Shelby County come into the area and work as a police officer. Well, late last night, the city council decided not to do that. They're not going to give the people a say on the issue. And it's got a lot of people very scared because you've got police officers that are retiring. You don't have enough people here in the city that want to be police officers. So they're short. And what does that mean? Well, when you've got two or three shootings a day, it means you're not going to have enough manpower. But the reality of it is this, and I was listening to KWAM this morning, and one of the city councilmen who supports the police put it very, very bluntly and hinted that this is really about race. You have a majority black city council, and the reality is they don't want people from the outside suburbs, which are predominantly white. They don't want those people coming in and patrolling the streets of Memphis, which is a majority black city, which is mind-blowing. But that is the reality. The police chief, who happens to be a rock-solid guy, is just beside himself. They're not quite sure how they're going to be able to protect the city. That's what people are dealing with here in this part of the country. There's a story up at foxnews.com. A major trucking company will not be going to any cities that are pushing to defund the police. And I say, good for you guys. JKC Trucking is the name of the company. And they say in order to keep their drivers safe, they're not going to direct any services to cities, I would say, like Minneapolis or Seattle or Portland or New York City. And I don't know, possibly Memphis. Who knows? But people are getting desperate out there. The district attorney's husband in Los Angeles, this story did not get a lot of attention. You remember a couple of, was it about a month or so ago? And the rampaging mob showed up on the front lawn of the district attorney's house. And so what does Mr. District Attorney do? Well, her husband goes out there, and he's opening up the door, and he's got his gun. He doesn't know what these people are going to do. He's watched the news, people burning down blocks and beating up people, yanking them out of their cars. And here he is in the privacy of his home, and he pulled out a gun and told him to get off of his lawn. But you know what happened? That guy now facing charges. It's unbelievable. It's just like the McCloskeys. Just like the McCloskeys. So the husband of the district attorney in Los Angeles is facing gun charges after he pointed a gun at protesters. He did so after the Black Lives Matter protesters descended upon his home. He's facing three misdemeanor counts of assault with a firearm. He never fired the gun. By the way, he never fired the weapon, but he did point it at him. In a video recorded by Black Lives Matter, David Lacey, that's his name, can be seen waving a gun and telling the protesters to leave, saying, quote, "I will shoot you. Get off my porch." Now, I want to ask you a question. You folks in Little Rock, Arkansas, many of you have front porches. What would you do if you had a mob, you woke up in the middle of the night and there's a mob on the front lawn of your home? What would you do? This man did what I suspect many of us would have done. The district attorney had to make an apology, said her husband meant no harm. The prosecutor said the protest crossed the line. She said it was creating a situation where somebody thinks they're about to be harmed. I would think that. A mob shows up outside of my home, that's what I'm thinking, that they want to do me harm. But clearly, these radical leftists now believe that they have a right to beat the holy living you-know-what out of you. 844-747-8868, toll-free number, that's 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
You're listening to Todd Starnes.
Oh, I love this story out of Arizona. Angel Martinez, age 14, he got caught taking his parents' Range Rover out for a spin without permission. Now, Caleb and Avery, have you guys ever done anything like, you know, that you got in trouble for at home?
Have I ever gotten in trouble at home? Yeah, I've never taken my parents' car without their permission,
though. Yeah, neither have I.
Yeah, that would not be good. So, this
thought
is
about
terrible.
It, though.
Angel, who does not have a license, says he took the car on a ride because he didn't have anything to dry the car with after washing it. Now, wait, that sounds fairly reasonable.
Let it air. I mean, yeah, but you just let it air dry. It'll be fine.
He said he was going to go for one spin until it dried. This is brilliant.
Is he okay, though?
Oh, yeah, he's, well,
I mean,
sort of.
Did he get injured? That's what I'm asking.
So mom and dad were in Vegas for the weekend when all of this happened. And, of course, the police got involved, And, of course, mom and dad got a call that their kid had been caught, you know, taking a joyride in the family Range Rover.
Oh, no.
Good-looking car, by the way. Same color as my caddy.
Oh.
So, anyway, mom and dad, so you got to punish the kid, right? So they decided to give away all of his belongings.
Oof.
Oh.
Oof.
Oh, man.
And he had to do it.
Oh, he had to do it. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, he had to do it. He was forced to give away all of his belongings, including his bed.
Oh,
it's like
yeesh.
It's like a garage sale. So
holy
his
cow.
His bed, his bedroom furniture, his clothing, and he's clothed, so I guess he didn't give away all of the clothes, and his television.
Okay, that one I understand.
And he had to sit outside the family house with a sign that says, "Sorry, I stole my parents' car and was speeding."
And was speeding.
Yeah. Okay, wow, that is...
Well, he was trying to air dry the car, so, you know, I mean...
Maybe speeding was the straw that broke the camel's back. You could have kept your stuff, but you just had to speed.
Son, what's going on? Well, Dad, I stole the car and I was speeding. You were speeding! What's wrong with
you? It's like that Jim Carrey movie, Liar, Liar. I ran a signal, I changed lanes at the intersection without running a red light and speeding!
Oh, my goodness. Well, look, I think this is a terrific punishment, and I do think that it's a... He also had to clean out his room as punishment.
By the way, did the parents at least get some remuneration for this stuff? Like, did they sell it and the parents keep the money? Because I imagine the parents are ultimately the ones who are losing out monetarily by giving all that stuff away for free.
Yeah, apparently I was reading where the kid is having to sleep on the couch now.
Wow, that is...
At least he's sleeping in a room with a TV in it.
Yeah, well, that is true. That's a fair point. Oh, kindergarten cop. We'll have to talk about this tomorrow. But kindergarten cop got canceled. Remember that? That's the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie back in the day. It was a great movie, too. But now, apparently, because it promotes a positive image of police, it's being pulled from a summer drive-in film series. What kind of country are we living in, folks? What kind of a country? All right. Well, Angel Martinez, Mr. and Mrs. Martinez, good for you. Sounds like good parents in my book. Kindergarten cop canceled. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Been a great day. Don't forget that John MacArthur interview. It'll be up on the website momentarily. This is the Todd Starnes Show. Have a great day, everybody.